everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this is It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me today. I am here in San Jose, California, at one of my very favorite restaurants, the Vegetarian House. So you may hear a little restaurant background noise. I want to give you a little authentic feeling about what we're talking about. I often call this place my home away from home, because when we come to New York, come from New York to California, this is one of the first places we visit. And I am here with Sunny Mueller, who is the manager here at Vegetarian House. And how are you today, Sunny?
Great. Thank you, Karen. Thank you for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. And it's nice to be talking to you, Sunny, on a cloudy, not very sunny day.
Yeah. Yeah, unusual for California.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, it's better than being in New York right now, which is absolutely brutal and freezing.
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
Yeah. Anyway, all my friends out there in New York, I wish you warmer times. Okay. So before we talk about the Vegetarian House, which I can't wait to hear more about, I want to know a little bit about you. Okay? So you're originally from Australia?
That's correct, yeah. Born and bred.
Born and bred. Very good. And at some point, you decided to not eat animals.
Yes.
And how did that happen? Was it in Australia?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I was exploring and experimenting with meditation. And I was practicing this form of meditation. And after a period of time, I went to the market, just like every normal kind of Thursday or Friday, to buy some meat. And suddenly, I just couldn't do it anymore. The smell of it just made me feel ill, and I had to get out. And from then, I just never ate it again.
So this was all on your own? You hadn't heard anything from anywhere else?
To be honest, I had started practicing meditation, which I was introduced to. It was the light and sound method, which is taught by Supreme Master Ching Hai.
Okay.
And there was an initial 30-day period where you just be vegetarian for 5 days a month and practice half an hour meditation. And I did that for about a month or two. And within that time period, something just changed within me. I started feeling more love, more compassion, and something seemed to awaken within me. And I just automatically couldn't eat animals anymore.
Right.
It wasn't like a conscious decision, okay, now's the time to stop. I mean, it just kind of automatically happened.
I'm thinking it's January, and a lot of people at the beginning of the new year, they want to do a detox or do a new diet or lose weight, and they're ready to take on new challenges. And there are different groups that have these pledges to take vegetarian pledges and just to try it for a short amount of time. But the idea behind it is when you try it, a lot of people stick with it because they feel better, or they have, like what you said, something changes.
Well, actually, I always think, actually, everybody has a loving nature. You know, everybody's true human nature is love. For example, say if you see an animal and somebody was hurting that animal, your natural instinct, like your human nature, would be to protect that animal, no matter what. If somebody was beating an animal, you'd stand up for that animal. I mean, that's your nature. But somehow there's a disconnect. People will stand up for that animal and protect that animal, but when that's finished, they'll go to the grocery store and see something packed up in a little sales and buy it. They don't realize that may have been the same animal. You know, so I think it's just a disconnect. People just don't see it. But I think people essentially are all kind at heart and loving. It's just different levels.
I like to say on this show that we tune in love.
Oh,
so we tune in live, but we tune in love. And I want to believe that too.
Yeah.
I really do. But, you know, I think there's something, some kind of survival instinct maybe that allows us to shut down parts of us where it's difficult to process. And sometimes that enables us to do things that aren't very nice.
Yeah, I can tell you a story, actually.
Okay, we love stories.
When I was a young boy, my dad would take me fishing. And he was teaching me how to fish, and then after catching the fish, he would kill the fish. You know, and I saw that, and I thought that was terrible. But then he taught me how to do it, you know, and I couldn't do it initially, you know. But then after he keep pushing me and pushed me, I did it. And after a time, you become desensitized to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not your original nature is not to kill or harm. I totally believe that. But it's just we become desensitized. We see our parents doing it, and our parents saw our parents doing it.
And you want to be a man and grow up.
Yeah, and you're just following your parents. And so I think your true human nature, when you're a baby, I don't think you'd want to harm anything. But just through society, the way it is, and the way we're kind of channeled into following everything else, I think somehow just we're kind of led that way and become disconnected and disassociated with our true nature, which is loving and kind and compassionate and peaceful.
So how do we bring everybody back to that innocent, sweet, kind fold?
I think it's changing. You know, people are awakening. There is I think consciousness is awakening. We're sitting in a restaurant here, actually. You know, we've been here, you know, 24, 25 years or so.
Wow.
And, you know, we're seeing more and more people becoming vegetarian and vegan. And, you know, many people come in and say, you know, we're going vegan now. You know, we tried it. You know, say 10 years ago we couldn't do it, but now we can. It's so easy. You know, there's an elevation, I think. So it's really positive and growing, and it's exciting.
Yeah, well, especially here in the Bay Area, at least.
Yes, well, definitely here. Yeah.
There are some other states that may be a little slower to come to this, but I agree. I definitely think there's a better awareness, and that's a good thing. Okay, so you were in Australia. You decided not to eat animals. And how did you get here to California?
Actually, this restaurant. I thought, you know, maybe I could, you know, give something to this restaurant, give something back, be of some service.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what better way to encourage people to be vegan than through their taste buds and their stomachs?
Have you been here since it opened?
No, I came just a few years after.
Okay. I don't know what this restaurant was before. My partner Gary always talks about how it was an Italian restaurant that a lot of people in the neighborhood went to.
Yes, that's true. You know, it was Paolo's. The story I heard was Marilyn Monroe used to come here.
Oh my goodness.
And Joe DiMaggio and, you know, some other celebrities used to come here to eat, actually.
A lot of history, a lot of karma.
Yes. But that could be cleaned up.
That karma is clean now. It's really clean in here. Okay, now, the vegetarian house is connected with the Supreme Master, Ching Hai.
Correct. Yes.
Can you tell us about the Supreme Master?
Yes. She's the most beautiful, spiritual, you know, enlightened being that, you know, I can say I've ever had the chance to come across. She teaches a form of meditation. It's called the Kuan Yin Method. It's an inner light and sound. And it's an awakening within you. So, you know, it's like, say, like Jesus. When Jesus was alive, there was no Christianity. There was just spirituality.
Mm.
Or when Buddha was alive, there was no Buddhism. There was just, you know, spirituality. Or Muhammad, there was no religion.
No religion.
It was just spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, basically, they're all the same. They're all talking about the same thing, going in the same direction, but just different ways. And so, spirituality is, you know, more of an inward turning. And so, instead of reading the scriptures, you can discover the scriptures within, say, and understand them better when you read them later.
Okay. Have you met the Supreme Master?
Yes, I have.
And where was that?
Actually, that was in New Zealand. I did meet her.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the vegetarian house now, the concept.
Yes.
Where did that come about, and the menu?
To be honest, actually, this restaurant was opened by the Supreme Master.
Mm-hmm.
She opened this restaurant, but now we take care of it for her. And, you know, it's you know, we're very conscious of the environment and our footprint and the ingredients we use. And so, for example, it's an entirely green restaurant. So we have our western roof is entirely full of solar panels.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so the restaurant uses solar energy, and what is not used in solar energy, we offset with wind credits. So we're 100% off the grid, essentially.
Wow.
And, you know, our ingredients, they're organic ingredients. We try and source the freshest we can. And we're even working with farmers, like local farmers, who grow for us. And they grow veganically.
And so, oh, I love that.
They're growing the vegetables without any animal byproducts.
Without any animal manure or byproducts, yeah.
And so we're working directly with them. And, you know, we're big proponents of non-genetically modified foods. I think we're one of the first restaurants in the Bay Area to go that way. We're working directly with Jeffrey Smith, you know. Quite some time ago. He was helping us transition. Because it was a huge transition, because everything we realized, this was about 10 years ago when we did this, so it was quite a while ago.
Yeah, I just want to say, Jeffrey Smith, I interviewed him a long time ago, but he's the author of Seeds of Deception.
Correct, yes.
And he did a number of different films about genetically modified foods, and he's been on this path for a long, long time now.
He's truly a saint. He's like one of the, he's at the front line. He's been really pioneering this movement and made so many people aware of the dangers. And that was one of the ways we found out about the danger of genetically modified food. And as soon as we realized what it was, we couldn't in good conscience serve it to the public. And so we pretty much overnight changed our menu.
Well, there's a concept. One of the things that I've noticed about the vegan restaurants that I go to, for the most part, the owners of the restaurants are very passionate about the mission, as compared to other restaurant owners who, you know, want to offer nice food, but they also, you know, care about making a profit, and there isn't much else behind it. But with vegan restaurants, there's a lot more behind it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for example, when we transitioned to non-genetically modified, like before we could get like a bucket of oil for like $24, but then to get that same bucket of oil, we had to pay like, what was it, about $75. And so, and then, you know, we had to change all our sauces. A lot of our sauces had to be recreated from scratch. So we knew the ingredients that were going into them. And, you know, a lot of the other ingredients we got, we would, you know, to make sure, we would send them to labs to check that they were really non-genetically modified.
Wow, you did that.
We did that. We sent tofu and sauces and different ingredients and frozen foods and so forth to labs and got reports saying that we either
they were
or
clean
not
or not clean.
Yes, yes. So,
well, I don't know when the first time was when I came to the Vegetarian House. I was glad it was here, and I don't remember what I ate. It was a long time ago. But then about 10 years ago, I started coming back pretty regularly, and I have to say that it's only gotten better. So I've noticed all the changes that you've done without knowing that you've made those changes, because it just gets better.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. So what is the fundamental mission or message of the Supreme Master?
Well, the underlying message, of course, is love. You know.
Okay, we like love.
Yeah.
Remember, love. Tune in love right now.
I mean, love and, you know...
Love is the only answer.
Yeah, love is the bottom line, really. But, you know, within love, there's compassion and kindness and just awakening your spiritual nature. I mean, we're spiritual beings, you know. We're not really human beings. We're just in this human body, but having a spiritual, you know, we're a spiritual being. And so just remembering that we're spiritual beings and awakening our spiritual nature and developing it, you know. I mean, we all have it, but it's just, where do you want to focus your attention? You know, we get caught in this world. It's so easy just to get swallowed into this world. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all our senses are in this world. But our true nature is spiritual, and so we come into this world to develop our spiritual qualities, you know, our loving kindness, our wisdom, you know, all our beautiful qualities. And the way to do that is really through awareness of your spiritual side. And so, you know, that is one way of awakening, you know, through meditation. It's very powerful.
And what kind of meditation do you do?
It's called the Kuan Yin method.
And where can we find out about that?
You can go online.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a TV station. It's called SupremeMasterTV.com.
I was interviewed by them in Dresden.
Yeah. Wow.
In 2009.
How about that?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of information on there. So I think that's a good place to start. There's a lot of lectures.
Okay. So they talk about the meditation there.
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. That's good. Now, so back to the Vegetarian House, my home away from home.
Yes.
I've noticed there are a lot more people coming than ever before.
Yes, that's for sure.
Which is very exciting. So you've told me about where you source your food and what foods you're looking for. Now let's talk about the menu.
Okay.
It's almost like a diner because there are so many different menu choices.
Yeah.
But is there like a one style of cuisine? Is it like Vietnamese?
It's a mix. See, we've got many different chefs. Actually, our kitchen is divided into three sections.
Oh.
We've got like one section with Chinese chefs, and then there's like another section, and the main chef is Vietnamese, and then there's another section, and the chef is Western, say, style.
I didn't know that.
And so they'll all kind of incorporate the best of each, and so that's how we get a lot of Chinese and, say, Taiwanese. We've also got authentic Indian dishes. We had like an Indian lady come in and teach us some authentic Indian dishes.
Mm-hmm. I just had the masala curry today.
Ah, wow.
That's good.
And so, and we've also got like Italian dishes with lasagnas or spaghettis, and we've got hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we bring in different, say the best of each country. We try and get a little bit from each around the world because, you know, we like to see it as one world, and there's so much to offer from each different country. So that's why our menu is pretty big. But yeah, it has a lot of, say, Asian influence. But we do bring in other countries also.
Well, here in San Jose, we're actually in what's called Little Vietnam, right?
Yeah, it's very close. Actually, there's a Little Vietnam village.
Oh, we're not quite in it?
Not quite.
Oh, okay. But there are a lot of Vietnamese restaurants right down the road.
There is, yes.
Yeah, and you have these big bowl soups, including the pho.
Yeah.
Which I like to call pho, but it's...
Very comforting.
Pho.
Pho, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Now, my favorite is the Flying Buddha.
Wow.
Where does that come from? Do you know?
I know. That's a Taiwanese soup, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And there's a lot of traditional Taiwanese ingredients and flavors. And it is a style of cooking. It's a very simple soup, but it's very, in its own way, complex with the time of cooking it and the ingredients they put in it. And it's boiled down. It's almost like a hot pot. You know,
yeah.
It is actually a hot pot. It's served with a little
right,
flame underneath
it. Right, it's got the sterno underneath.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good. I don't like to eat a lot of noodles.
Yes.
And this is not and a lot of those big soups are noodle soups, but this is a not noodle soup, but it has, there are some things, I don't even know what they are.
There's also a little ginkgo nut in there.
Oh, those are good, yeah.
Yeah, those little nuts. And,
where do they come from?
It's a tree. Believe it or not.
Do we grow the, is it, do you, are they from California?
We have to import those.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, some of the ingredients we do have to import. But yeah, it's got a lot of Napa cabbage and you know, a lot of vegetables like you mentioned and some mushroom stems and, you know, it just comes together really well. And then it's got a great name, Flying Buddha.
Yeah. It's my favorite. But I didn't have it today. I tried the masala curry for a change.
Okay. But there's another great soup you'll have to try. It's also like a hot pot. It's from Vietnam. It's called the Olak sweet and sour soup or Gan Chua.
Mm-hmm.
That is also very good.
What do you like about it?
That's probably my favorite. It's just got exciting flavors. Like they seem to burst out at you.
Mm-hmm.
And exotic ingredients. Like it's got banana stem. And, it's a sweet and sour kind of...
You can eat a banana stem?
You can, yeah.
I mean, I've seen people serve in a banana leaf, but eating the banana stem...
Have to try that soup.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It's probably our most exciting soup, to be honest.
And what's the most popular dish? Is there a popular dish?
Wow, spicy cha-cha, definitely.
Oh, okay.
Spicy cha-cha.
So spicy cha-cha is like fried shrimp.
It is. Actually, people come in here and they say they prefer this... to real shrimp. And actually, we're doing a lot of corporate catering. We're always doing, you know, big events over at Cisco or, you know, Adobe or a lot of the high-tech areas, high-tech companies in the Bay Area. We're doing a lot of catering, actually. So it's really good. And they always love that dish and they tell us to double up on it.
Well, I don't know if you know this or remember. I think it was three or four years ago, we had a fundraiser for our nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, and my partner Gary and I did a show that we created called the Happy Earth Day Review. It was on Earth Day, which is also my birthday, so we do the Happy Earth Day show. And it's a story where we sing and perform, and I tell about my journey with advanced ovarian cancer, which I had 11 years ago, and I'm here and healthy.
Congratulations. That's
Thank
great.
You. And Gary talks about his journey losing 100 pounds.
Whoa, 100 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even imagine where he'd put them, right?
That's incredible.
And he was challenged his entire life with diets. He tried every imaginable diet, and then he found peace.
What was the secret?
He found me, but then he also found the vegan diet. He made peace. He found peace with his food. And all the foods that he was always told he couldn't eat, like peanut butter, he could eat.
There it is.
He just found peace, and
natural.
It made sense. Yeah. Anyway, so when we did this show here in San Jose, the Vegetarian House catered it. And one of the dishes was spicy cha-cha, and I had never tried it before. And everybody in the group who came kept saying, "What is that?"
Wow.
They thought it was shrimp.
That's great.
But they knew it wasn't because we were talking about not eating those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fried food, so it's a treat.
It is
from
a treat.
My point of view.
I wouldn't eat it every day, but as a special treat, you know, you're allowed to spoil yourself once in a while.
And to let people know that they can have everything, that it's not a diet of deprivation.
That's true. I mean, some people think if they've got to go vegetarian, they've got to eat like a rabbit. But that's totally not true.
Although I like eating like a rabbit, but you don't have to.
You don't have to. No.
Okay. Is everyone that works here involved with the Supreme Master?
No, not everybody.
Because everybody's very nice here.
Yeah.
There's definitely this love thing going on.
People do change, we notice, when they come here. You know, say we'll hire new hire, and they may be a little rough, and they're not vegetarian, but all our staff members get, you know, a meal, you know, provide them with a meal, and they do end up, many of them, turning vegetarian or vegan, and they do soften up a little bit, you know. We definitely notice that. So that may be what you're seeing.
I don't know. How could you not? It's just love, and I don't know what it's like to work here, but I know in most restaurants, it's very stressful.
Sure, it can be also. I mean, all that is the nature of restaurant business. But, you know, we're doing it. I mean, many restaurants exist to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, our mission is to exist to really show people, and the vegan is delicious, one. And, you know, they don't need to kill anything to have a great meal. You know, they can... And just appeal to people's compassionate, kind, loving nature. And people tell us, you know, we see a lot of people come in, say their wife will bring in the husband or boyfriend or something, and they look totally grumpy and miserable because they don't want to be here.
Yep, right.
You know, but after the meal, they're smiling and they leave happy and they come back. So, you know.
Yeah, you know, I was telling you earlier, my dad died in November, and... he has three vegan children.
Oh, wow.
And we'd always want to go somewhere where we could eat. And it frustrated him sometimes because he thought he wouldn't have something to eat. And he would have that scowl on his face. And then, you know, we'd feed him something good and he'd be smiling.
Here you go.
Yeah. Okay, now you've got an event coming up that I want to talk a little bit about, because everybody who's in the Bay Area, I think you want to go to this. Not only will you have an opportunity to try this fantastic food, but you'll be able to hear Dr. Will Tuttle, the author of The World Peace Diet. So let's talk about that event.
Yes, it's it's actually Thursday, January 11th.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Will Tuttle, I mean, he travels the entire world, the entire globe, just telling people, you know, appealing to people's mind about why it is we should eat a vegan diet. You know, it's very logical talk and very structured. He was the author of The World Peace Diet. That went to number one on Amazon. But his talk is so powerful. After people hear him talking, especially people who are thinking about going vegan,
mm-hmm.
it's a slam dunk, you know, because it just... Because often people think in their mind they can't do it, or they're not. But if you can understand why you are doing something, and that's what his talk does, it'll help you to understand why it is we must be vegan. And, you know, it's our nature. So we're putting the event on. He'll be here. It starts at 6:30 p.m. And So he'll do the talk, and then after the lecture, we will be putting on a vegan buffet. So, you know, you can try
okay,
the vegan food
do you know
firsthand.
What, do you know what you're going to be serving? Will there be spicy cha-cha?
There will be. Yes, definitely.
That's good. I'm remembering, I've talked to Will on a number of times, and he came to this place where he's at, this peaceful place. He did a lot of meditating.
Yeah, he did.
He
was a monk.
He was a monk.
Before, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's,
there was a lot of quiet time, a lot of inner reflection.
Yeah, and he was able to piece it together and really see clearly. And he's so gifted in sharing his experience with other people. And so people don't need to go to those lengths to understand, you know, what veganism is all about.
One of the things I like about this show, It's All About Food, is I get to talk to a lot of wonderful people, including yourself and Will Tuttle, who are doing amazing things to promote love and kindness and make this world a better place. And what's great is it's available on the internet for free for anyone to hear. And I like that we reach a lot of people that way. But there is nothing better than meeting someone and hearing them speak in person.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, so these events are important. Not
That's
everybody
true.
Can go, but if you can, you'll feel something.
You will. It'll be an evening you'll never forget. Yeah, mm-hmm. I can guarantee that.
Yeah.
And it'll be a very intimate setting. And so, yeah, it'll be a nice, small environment with directly with an evening with Will Tuttle, Dr. Will Tuttle. So, you know, I'd definitely say don't miss it.
Don't miss it. Son, that's what Sonny says. Don't miss it. Will he be playing a little piano, too?
He may be. We just had the piano tuned today.
Oh, good.
But the tickets are selling fast.
Oh, good.
And
that's
as it's,
good.
As it is, a, you know, just an intimate crowd, so if you want to come, I would suggest getting the tickets quickly.
Get the tickets quickly. I'm very delighted to hear that they're selling.
You can either get them directly from the restaurant or go to eventbrite.com.
Okay, so you have a website, and that is?
Vegetarianhouse.us.
Vegetarianhouse.us.
And there's a link to get tickets on that also.
Okay. What else would you like to tell me while we have this quiet moment?
Yeah. Well,
Does the Supreme Master and all the restaurants that she's created, there's a mission behind that, obviously, to introduce people to healthy, delicious food. Is there more to it?
Well, I think telling people to be vegan, you know, we're telling people to be vegan, they must be vegan, they should eat vegan, they shouldn't kill animals, you know, but then what do you eat? And so by opening
Access
up different restaurants
and
letting people eat the actual mm-hmm. vegan food and realizing that, wow, this is really good, and letting them understand that this is something they can do, I think that's key.
Do you know how many there are?
There was a chain of Loving Huts.
Yeah, we have one in New York.
Opened up, and to be honest, I don't know him. In pretty much every major city, you can find a Loving Hut.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can travel the world. You can go to Moscow or Berlin or, you know, Paris, you know, Amsterdam, even in India or, you know, Malaysia, Singapore, you know, New York, London. San Francisco,
that's amazing. Yeah.
You'll find Loving Huts.
There's vegan food everywhere.
There is now, yes. Yeah, so being a vegan is a cinch.
Okay, so if you're thinking of going vegan, folks, Sonny says it, it's a cinch, and you can find Loving Huts everywhere. And right here, there's a big Loving Hut called the Vegetarian House right in San Jose. Well, this has been great. Thank you for taking this time to talk to me.
Thank you for having me on the show. It was a real honor.
Hey, everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass, and thanks for listening to the first part of my show today with Sonny Mueller from the Vegetarian House in San Jose. And I hope that if you're ever in this area in San Jose, you will stop in to the Vegetarian House. If you're going there, let me know, and I'll tell you some of the things that I recommend. Or you could visit my blog, What Vegans Eat, put the Vegetarian House in the search bar, and you'll see how many times we've been there and some of the dishes that we've eaten. I'll tell you, my favorites are the Flying Buddha soup and the Heavenly Salad, but there are so many other wonderful, wonderful dishes. Now, that interview with Sonny Mueller was pre-recorded earlier in the week, and now let's get on to the second part of the show. I have some exciting news. It's All About Food has a new sponsor, Health IQ. Health IQ is an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, vegans, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. And if you go to healthiq.com/IAAF, you can show your support for this show and see if you qualify. That's healthiq.com, IAAF. IAAF is the initials for It's All About Food. And I want to tell you why I'm excited to have Health IQ as a sponsor. So you may remember, I've been talking quite a bit the last few months about my mom and dad, and my dad passed away in November. Then my siblings, my sister, brother, and I were scrambling to get all the finances in order, and I'm really grateful for my dad. He was so organized and left really detailed information about accounts and passwords, all the important things. But another thing he did was he had several life insurance policies, and now that we're going through the paperwork and processing all of that, I'm so grateful that he did that because my mom basically has nothing to worry about. It's because he had life insurance, and I'm now realizing the importance of life insurance. I'm excited to hear about this company, Health IQ, because Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like us. Now, Health IQ saves their customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. And that's according to an article in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. And we know, too, that vegans and vegetarians have lower risks of all those chronic diseases. This company takes advantage of that. So I hope you will take the time to visit healthiq.com/IAAF and see if you qualify for life insurance with them. It's important. Now that it's a new year, there are a number of different organizations that are putting out their food trends for the new year and things to look out for based on what's happened in the past. And I wanted to talk about some of them because I think they're interesting. Some of them are amusing. Some of them might even be scary. And when we're talking about scary, what do you think about these cell-cultured meat products that are out in the world? Cellular agriculture is a trend to watch in the future, according to Elaine Watson at the Food Navigator-USA. And I know a lot of people get emotional about this. On one hand, I think anything to save the lives of non-human animals is a good thing. Anything at all. And if people feel like they need to eat their meat and we can make it without using animals so that people are getting the meat that they want with the taste and texture and flavors that they want, that's fine. The question is that I have, of course, is why would anyone want to do that? We've heard so many times on this show and with many of the experts that I've spoken with that animal foods are not really healthy foods to eat. So making meat with cellular agriculture, can it be done in a way that's healthy as well as cruelty-free and environmentally friendly? I guess that's something that we will find out about. Personally, I prefer the plant-based innovations that are coming out, like chickpea proteins. Pea protein's been pretty popular, but you know how much I love chickpeas, and there's a lot of foods that are starting to use the chickpea protein. The thing, of course, that I'm concerned about, as always, is companies that overprocess and take something that is essentially a whole good food and then process it to a point where it's not the same anymore, and consuming it is not the same in the human body. Take soy foods, for example. Whole, minimally processed soy foods, non-genetically modified, can be part of a healthy diet. I know people are scared about soy foods, and I think it's because we're confused about soy foods. When we overly process soy food and make an isolated soy protein, that's where the problems can come in. And of course, with genetically modified soy foods. So back to whole, minimally processed foods. But, you know, there isn't as much money in whole, minimally processed foods. And companies that want to have products and investors that want to invest in products, they have to manipulate everything in order to have something unique and individual. And that's where the trends are going. Still, Elaine Watson talks about other trends, and that includes GMO labeling, clean labeling. She notes that sugar is still under fire, protein is still hot, and fermentation is on fire too, with probiotics hitting the mainstream. All interesting food things to consider. Again, I know people are confused, and when we talk about needing probiotics, probiotics can be very helpful, especially when we've had a high dose of antibiotics, for example, or if our gut flora is so out of whack that we need to introduce healthy probiotics in order to get our digestive system functioning again. But if we are indeed on a healthy, nutritious, whole, minimally processed plant diet and are eating foods like beans, which provide the prebiotics, the food for probiotics, we don't really need to be consuming probiotics because our gut does that. We have plenty in our own system if we're healthy. So buying expensive probiotics or food products and drinks that contain probiotics really aren't necessary, and something for you to consider. Now, I've talked about my yogurt that I love to make at home, and it has probiotics in it, and I like to eat it. I just like it as a food. I like the way it tastes, and I actually have fun making it, and I use either organic almonds or organic cashews, and I soak them first. And something I just discovered, which I didn't realize, or maybe I had learned it and forgotten it, who knows? There's just so much information out there, right? A lot of people are afraid to eat nuts and seeds because they have a lot of fat. But it's good fat, and it's food fat packed with fiber and all kinds of nutrients. Well, if you soak your nuts and seeds, they don't have as much fat in them per calorie. So you can enjoy the nuts and their benefits and get a little less fat by soaking them. That was something fun to learn. And then some of the other new trends have to do with people wanting to eat healthier and eat at home, actually. And the ways that they do that are interesting, right? So the meal kits are becoming more and more desirable. Consumers want to know how their food is made, and many of them are giving up going to restaurants as often and cooking at home, but they do it by ordering meal kits, which make it easier to do that. And it kind of makes it easier because everything is pretty much done for you. The planning, the shopping, and the preparing is a lot simpler. And you know, I've always had an uncomfortable feeling about these meal kit concepts. I know they're very popular, but I realize that they can be beneficial because they help people learn how to prepare their food, which is good. They help people be more aware of what's in their food, which is good, because I think we've kind of lost a lot of knowledge over the last few decades as we have been drawn to eat out, as it's become less expensive and more people are able to eat outside of the home, be it with fast food or in fine dining restaurants. And now we need to kind of come back and learn how to make food at home, find the kitchen, like I always like to say. And these meal kits can help people do that. But my ultimate goal is, do we really need the meal kits? Can't we just be creative, choose our food, plan our meals, and make them? And maybe that's just a pie in the sky, a vegan, gluten-free pie in the sky dream. And maybe it doesn't even matter. What matters is that people eat healthier so that their health improves and that they enjoy what they're eating. And there are other ways that food gets into the home. People are ordering more food or buying more food in the store with things like sous vide, for example. Sous vide. Ah, Tish, that's French. Sous vide. S-O-U-S space V-I-D-E. That means under vacuum. Those are the plastic pouches of food that you can dip into a pot of boiling water and heat it up. People may think that's a good idea. Personally, I don't like cooking anything in plastic, so I wouldn't go for it. But there seems to be a trend of people buying more of these kinds of foods because they want to do more things at home, cook more meals at home, and eat at home. And people are also growing things at home. This is exciting. The Indoor growing kits for herbs and mushrooms and veggies are also becoming more popular. And hydroponics and aquaponics, I think we'll maybe see more of them in kitchens. I'm thinking that could be really fun. People can have their upscale ranges and their fancy refrigerators and really nice appliances, but maybe the next thing in kitchens is to have these built-in systems where we can hydroponically grow food. Now, I know there's also aquaculture, and that would be a way for people to grow fish in their home, fish to eat, or the aquaculture that is available is to be able to grow more fish for food. You know I don't like that. Fish are your friends, not food. As I quote Finding Nemo, the movie, fish are your friends, not food. But I digress. These are the trends. Another food trend mentioned from the Institute of Food Technologists. And can we trust the Institute of Food Technologists? They noted that there is a trend in animal welfare versus price. And I'm not sure that I like it, and I don't know if I agree. But they quoted Tony Tarver, senior technical editor, saying the stigma of conventionally produced animal products will decrease as consumers realize that they cannot or will not absorb the higher cost associated with, quote, humanely raised, unquote, beef, poultry, and pork. So this tells us a lot. And I'll tell you what it tells me. What it tells me is that people who eat animals ultimately will choose to buy meats and poultries that are cheaper. Because until you realize that non-human animals are not meant to be eaten, that they're innocent and sentient and really deserve to have their own lives to be led, you can make these compromises in your mind saying, I'm eating these animals, I'm going to go for the least expensive. There are those that say that they prefer to eat humanely raised beef, humanely raised poultry, humanely raised pork. And I'm going to sound very judgmental here because I believe animals shouldn't be eaten, period. And if you can find a justification in your mind that it's okay to eat non-human animals and justify it because if they're treated well, if they're treated, quote, humanely, then it's okay, I think it'll be easy to just slip down that slope when the price is less expensive for the industrial raised, for the more conventionally raised, which includes a lot more cruelty. The way to go for price and for kindness is to eat plants. The other thing about this quote, the stigma of conventionally produced animal products will decrease as consumers realize they cannot or will not absorb the higher costs associated with humanely raised beef, poultry, and pork. The other thing is people continue to choose low cost as the ultimate decision maker. And hey, you know, I've purchased from Amazon.com. I've gone the low cost route myself, unfortunately, and as a result, we've seen all these bookstores close, and now Amazon is opening bookstores. I would hope that you would make more conscious decisions about your purchases with food and other things, because we need to make more conscious decisions. The costs will be so much more in the long run. If you're looking at where to put your food dollars, don't choose cheap. If it's a quality product and you happen to get a good deal on it, that's great. I personally prioritize in my life, I'm not a big consumer of stuff. I am a consumer of high quality food because it's good for me. And I also know that the organic food that I'm purchasing is better for the planet and for the people that are growing that food. That's the thing about organic food, not using these toxic herbicides and pesticides. The people that are growing foods conventionally, the migrant workers, they unfortunately have higher instances of cancer because they're exposed to these toxic chemicals. And I don't want to put them in my body, and I don't want any other people to put them in their bodies at my expense to grow my food. Many of us will choose price first, so I'm just hoping you'll be mindful about it. Then there are the Innova Market Insights top 5 trends for the coming year. And the first one is mindful choices. I love this. Consumers are more conscious than ever about making responsible food choices. Now, we could take a moment to define what responsible food choices are, because I'm sure they're different with every individual, but okay. Apparently, these consumers increasingly want to know what is in their food and how it is produced. That's good. That's good. That means we're getting the information out there. People are learning and wanting to know more. The Innova Market Insights research data indicates that 1 in 2 US, UK, and German consumers read ingredient labels often, and that 7 out of 10 US and UK consumers want to know and understand ingredient lists. And I can see my own trends where I go. Now, granted, I'm not in all cities all around the United States, and I'm sure that the Midwest is different than New England and it's different than the South, etc. I tend to travel from New York to California and back, so I'm not really getting a real perspective of the entire country, but I'm always excited to come to California. And yesterday, we had a meal at the True Food Kitchen. Have you heard of them? It's a chain, and they're in a lot of states now, and I'm really excited about them. We were given a gift certificate to go there, a gift card. I never heard of True Food Kitchen, but it was fantastic. So it's for everyone, and the food is organic, and it's freshly prepared. They have some wonderful vegan options. Things are labeled gluten-free, etc. Although they're not a certified gluten-free space, I guess if you cannot consume gluten, you might be a little more careful in a place like this. The vegan options were incredibly creative. Now, this restaurant was co-founded by Dr. Andrew Weil. He's really onto something here. We started with an appetizer. It was a roasted cauliflower or grilled cauliflower dish that was mixed with dates and topped with a tahini dressing or a tahini sauce that had turmeric in it, which gave it a nice orange color. It was wonderful. I've talked about my love for cauliflower before, and I always look at different recipes with cauliflower in it, the kind that make cream sauces with cauliflower or mash cauliflower or different things, and I always end up just preferring it steamed, except for yesterday. I discovered that the pairing of tahini, sesame tahini, with cauliflower is amazing. And I can't wait to go home and make a few dishes with cauliflower and tahini. I have a few in mind. Stay tuned. So good. And then Gary and I each chose a different entree. Mine was an ancient grain dish. And we laughed thinking that, oh, I'm being served old grains here. They're ancient grains. Ha ha ha. There's a restaurant in our neighborhood in New York that we've never been to because it's a steakhouse and it's called Aged. Are you familiar with that restaurant, Aged? It's called A-G-E-D, period, Aged. I'm not sure why they put a period on it. We always wonder, why would somebody want to eat old food? Food that's old or ancient. But I know what they mean by ancient grains. And there was quinoa in the dish, and I'm not sure what the other ancient grains were. The implication is that these are grains that have been around for a long time, that are not heavily hybridized, genetically modified, but are the kinds of grains that people have been eating for a very long time. And it was a great dish. It came with a glazed sweet potato that tasted like there was a little balsamic vinegar in there. It was a tart, sweet flavor. And it had a wonderful pesto, portobello mushrooms. Oh my God, it was so amazing. And Gary went with a tempeh sandwich. It was tempeh bacon with some other goodies in there and vegan mayo. And what surprised me is there are restaurants today that serve vegan options, but they are never this creative, not like this place. So if you have an opportunity, look up True Food Kitchen, see if there's one in your neighborhood, and try it. I also had a green juice, and while we were drinking our green juices, we both made a commitment to getting back to drinking green juices. You know, a few months ago, I stopped drinking green juices on a daily basis. You may remember that when I was diagnosed with the ovarian cancer back in 2006, I started having green juices every day, and I continued to do this for over 10 years every day. most of the time making my own green juices. The last few years, I started making a week's worth of green juices and freezing them and having a juice to take out every day. And Gary often joined me in having green juices. And then I just decided I'm well and I don't need to have my daily green juices anymore. And I've been having more smoothies, which are easy to make and fun. We both decided that we like green juice. We just like it. And it feels good. So we're going to get back to having regular green juices. I'm not quite sure when we're going to start because we're on the road until the end of February. And it's a little more difficult to make juice. But there are juice places here and there and everywhere. So if you check my blog, you'll get to know and see how often we're having our green juices and committing to having them. And if you're new to this program, if you haven't been to my nonprofit website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, and maybe you're curious about green juicing and green smoothies and why one might be better than the other in certain instances, I invite you to go to my It's All About Greens 4-part video series. It's on the responsibleeatingandliving.com site. I talk about juicing. I talk about blending greens into smoothies. I talk about cooking greens, steaming greens, and eating greens in salad. Greens are an essential part of the human diet, and we should be eating our greens cooked and raw, both. And as many people are thinking at the beginning of the year to diet and detox, there are so many detox programs out that I'm seeing all the time now. I want you to keep in mind that the best way to detox is 1, not put anything bad in your body, and 2, eat a lot of greens. Greens are the best way to detox your body. Dark leafy green vegetables. Yep, that's how we do it. I wanted to mention one more group's article on trends, and the Hartman Group has a food and beverage culture year in review for 2017. And they mentioned a number of things. Number one, apparently 91% of consumers snack multiple times throughout the day, and 47% say they can't live without snacks. They can't get through the day without snacks. Are you a snacker? Personally, I'm a believer of eating when hungry. But typically for me and my partner Gary, that means we'll sit down and have a meal when we're hungry. And sometimes that'll be really late at night, even though eating late at night isn't recommended. But I think the key is to make sure you have a significant period of fasting in between your last meal and the next day's meal. So if we eat at 11 o'clock at night because we've been up late and we stay up a little later after that, well, we won't eat the next meal until lunchtime the next day, probably. We'll go 12, 14 hours before our next meal, and I think that's important. But back to snacking. People like to snack. And something I've learned from reading and from my individual coaching practice is very often, especially in an office environment, and even when we're working at home, we need breaks. We need to get up and move around. In the office, we like to get up and socialize. And when we're at home, just to break the monotony of sitting and staring at a screen all day or whatever it is one might do working at home, we need to get up. And very often, an excuse to get up or to do something is, oh, I think I'll have a snack now. And when you think about when you snack and what's happening when you snack, you may realize that it's not the snack at all that you're interested in. In the office, for example, having a snack includes dialoguing and having conversation with colleagues. It's interesting. It's enlightening. It's a nice break in the otherwise tedious stuff on the job. And the same thing at home. So if you're someone who is snacking and maybe not choosing the best choices of snacks, you might want to keep track of when you go for a snack and then see if there are trends. We're talking about trends today, trends in eating. What are your trends? What gets you to get up to have a snack? Are you really hungry, is my point, or is it something else that you're looking for? Now, when I snack, I got to be honest with you, I go for the healthy items. I'll have some celery sticks or carrot sticks. I love them, okay? They're crunchy, and when they're organic and they're fresh, they're delicious. And celery is full of electrolytes, so good for you. And whoever said an apple a day keeps the doctor away, a piece of fresh fruit will really do it. And if you find you're really hungry and you're struggling to make it to the next meal, you could have two apples. You could have a whole bag of celery sticks. Eat whatever it takes to satisfy that feeling. And I remember reading in Dr. Furman's book, The End of Diabetes, he talks about the importance of not snacking, because once we stop eating a meal, the body goes into its digestive process, and the first part is digesting the food, but the second part is eliminating the parts of the food that we don't want or the byproducts that may be toxic, not good for us, and starts to eliminate them. And when we break that cycle with a snack, we're not eliminating the parts of the food or part of the digestive process that needs to be eliminated, that needs to leave the body. So for the 91% of consumers that snack multiple times throughout the day, I leave this bit of information just for you. Hey everybody, we've come to the end of another show. I really am so glad that you're here and you care about your food and your food choices and where your food comes from. Thanks so much for joining me and listening. You can always contact me at info@realmeals.org and find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Have a very delicious week. Thank you.